You just opened up the podcast, Gav. Is the executioner indicative of anything? For anybody just hopping into this video and not understanding what we're talking about, Grinding Gear Games just sent out a tweet talking about their big upcoming patch, and they always do image headers. And in this particular image header, it was the executioner. And what is the executioner known for, Gav?
The hammer, the anchor, the guillotine. That's yep. what it is. Yeah, the dude, it's going to drop.
Yeah, the guillotine drops. So I think that's the perfect way to start off this chat, since it's so, you know, timely. What do you think is going to happen with this patch? What do you think is going to be nerfed? Do you think there's going to be any big changes? Let's just spend a good like 10, 15 minutes on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Warrior's going to get nerfed. And then from there, no, but I think that honestly, they are really wanting to slow the game down. So I honestly do foresee a lot of nerfs. I think 48% of the player base is going to be a little unhappy. That's the Stormweavers, right? So yeah, man, it's going to be big. I don't know what they're going to do, to be honest. I definitely foresee some Herald of Ice nerfs coming. That's pretty huge. I think, I can't remember who it was, but they said that they'll probably reduce or just completely remove the ability for those to cause ailments, because that's like kind of the issue with how it's chaining and things like that.
Yeah, right, because Herald of Ice and Herald of Thunder can basically act off each other, right? If you swap each of them to the other element type. And there are weird interaction going on there.
Yeah, there's like the Herald of Ice ring as well, which is completely popping off.
Mm-hmm. I saw that from a Balor Mage build, I think. I don't know if he originated it, but I saw it on his video, where you can do basically one hit, and the screen will just obliterate.
Yep.
With Ice Strike.
Yeah, it's literally full screen. Like, if you scale AoE, yeah. Like, it goes around corners and everything, depending on, you know, you don't even need to be in line of sight, as long as the mobs are basically within the distance of each other that they need to be. It's crazy.
Crazy indeed. Now, do you think that the primary candidate for straight up nerfing is Archmage? And I mean, from my POV, I don't think there's any big bugs going on there. It just seems like it's so out of line with how it can be scaled with your mana and the availability of all those increases on gear and on the tree. And that is essentially funneling all sorceress players into that one archetype. So do you think it's going to get the nerf hammer? And how would you nerf Archmage if you could?
I haven't played Archmage. I'm a complete hipster when it comes to builds, man. So like, literally, as soon, like, my monk was my first character, right? And as soon as everybody came out with Ice Strike Invoker, I was off of it. I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. Like, this is way too popular. So I'm playing Blood Mage for now, for reference, just as far as, you know, hipster builds go. So yeah, I haven't played Archmage, so I don't know how I would actually nerf that, but probably some reductions to the amount of mana that you can scale, because it's just absolutely outrageous. Yeah. Like 200 plus mana, and then you scale it with Breach Rings and all this other shenanigans.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And the other candidate, I'd say, if they're going to do some big swings here, it's probably Energy Shield. And I think Energy Shield is so massively tied to the tree. And I remember that they wanted to remove the need to take something always on the tree, and that's why they removed life from the tree. But now it's just been replaced with Energy Shield. Energy Shield is basically life, but better, and you can scale it so greatly on the tree itself. So I know there's been a lot of debate about defenses and the like, and on your builds, have you primarily been specking into Energy Shield as well, or have you experimented with any other type of defenses?
On my monk, I was going kind of a hybrid Energy Shield health, so I had like 2,500 of each, so that was pretty comfy. And then I went purely evasion on my Pathfinder, then kind of a hybrid evasion armor on my Mercenary. So I've tried a little bit of all of it. Armor is definitely completely just undertuned. Like, it's nothing. I'm sure everybody's seen Crip's video and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's really bad. The issue with Energy Shield being so good is that there's really no other alternative right now.
Right. Yeah, it's what everybody wants to spec into. And then the one archetype that struggles to spec into it is further pushed out of the window. And is this one of the only classes that you haven't played Gav? Is Warrior and Maces, right?
Yep. That's one that I'm looking to do next. I want to play Molten Blast, I think, because I was a big Molten Strike fan back in the day in POE1. So
that looks pretty dope.
And I've seen some really cool tech for it as well. So I'm pretty excited to put that together. But even Warriors are using Energy Shield, man. What do you mean? That you just put on a Ghost Writhe and you're winning.
Okay, right. You're right. It's more difficult on a Warrior to scale it, though, right? And it's so antithetical to what you want to do as a Warrior. And I feel like you're a new player coming into Path of Exile 2. And you're trying to scale armor and you're just getting destroyed as the Warrior. And then everybody's like, oh yeah, you just put on this unique item that you can get for like what Crypts say, 1x in trade. And you just put it on and you're good. And you go this completely different path, right? And it's so weird.
Well, it's just a buffer, right? Like it's just, you just get 6,000, you know, EHP buffer before they're even hitting your health.
It's crazy. I'm very interested to see if they're going to alter Archmage, Energy Shield, and then I think the other third thing, if we're talking nerfs here, I mean, we've kind of touched on it a little bit. You thought you were a hipster, and then everybody discovered the tech.
Oh, yeah.
Just like Monk in general, dude. Like, the broken... it's so good. Somehow I lucked into playing probably the coolest launch EA class, which is the Monk Invoker. I mean... it's the coolest.
It was my first
there,
as well. Yeah, it was so smooth going through the campaign on Monk, man. And it's the unfortunate thing that it's so popular is that like it was literally probably one of the best feeling melee classes that I've ever played in an RPG.
Right. So my little thing is, do they need to nerf the Monk, or do they just need to do some minor adjustments here and there? Because I feel like they've completed this fantasy so well of wielding the quarterstaff and just buzzing around and blinking to and from foes and channeling the elements.
You feel like a Jedi, man.
I don't know if anything is too busted. Do you think there's something that just needs to be smashed, like with Archmage, or is it more a matter of fine tuning? You know, Ice Strike here, Tempest Flurry, AOE, and cooldown scaling there, and everything.
I don't know if it's I don't know if it's the effectiveness of the skills that's buffing it, you know, so much, or if it's the Herald shenanigans that are kind of, you know, creating some of that. It's definitely Bell. I think Bell is going to get hit, you know, to some degree. Whether they intended for charge staff to actually interact with it that much, I don't know. Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I've seen people with like 4 Bells. They're using 4 skill slots for Bells.
Bell is indeed strong, and the damage you can dish out on a boss is just tremendous. Yeah. Like you said, you smoothed through the campaign on Monk. As soon as I got my build going, man, oh my gosh, everything just melted, especially in Cruel. And the thing is, like you, I feel like you're pretty intelligent, you're good at build craft. Me, I don't feel that way, and I just started killing everything, and I was like, what the hell did I do here? Yeah. I didn't do anything.
No, I mean, I kind of lucked into the interaction as well. I was like going lightning to start off, and then I saw charge staff, obviously. So I was using siphoning strike to get my power charge, even on bosses. And then, you know, it's very intuitive. They made it that way by design. So, you know, I feel like a lot of people were going to figure it out, you know, regardless. And then it just went further and further from there with ice strike and all of the other tech that was introduced. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I'm leaning on the fine-tune a few Monk skills, but don't go completely berserk, because there's still some variety there. You know, we've mentioned the 4 Tempest Bell strat. We know we've seen people just doing pure Ice Strike. Then we have the Tempest Flurry builds, and then we have pure Flicker builds, and then we have a combination of all the rest. I feel like there's far more variety with Monk, or we're saying Monk, but really what we mean is Quarterstaff.
Quarterstaff.
We even see, you know, invokers. We see chalupas. Chayulas. Chalupas.
Chonk, man. Chonk.
The Chayula, the Chonks. And we see the Gemling Legionnaires. You know, I've seen some Titan quarterstaff builds. So I feel like they've really succeeded with the quarterstaff. It's just a matter of fine-tuning it a little bit further.
Yeah, it doesn't even feel like melee. Like that, when they said that they got melee right, I think that they were literally referring to quarterstaff. What do you think? I don't think they were talking about maces.
dude, I think you're a little right. So here, it's an interesting debate because I've been hearing a lot of people who have finally decided to try Warrior. A lot of people who started as Sork, or Ranger, or Merc, or Monk. They were like, okay, last on my list is Warrior. I know like Rax has tried it recently. Balor has tried it recently. And the consensus of those two people, calling it a consensus incorrectly here, is that it feels horrible. And that they're shocked that it made it into early access in this state.
Yeah.
Now, my gut feeling is Grinding Gear Games was going for distinct play styles with each of these weapons. And the Mace play style is just super slow, super big hits, and you're supposed to be able to withstand the hordes of enemies coming your way. And so far, I'm very little, you know, evidence right here, but so far in the campaign, I've been doing fine with that, but I can see, like, I've been able to withstand the enemies coming my way, like, fight through them, either with the abilities or stunning or just, you know, using health pots, whatever. But I can see where that would just go like this when you get into the current state of endgame. Oh my, how do you survive that? I just see myself evaporating.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked for sure, you and I both, on, you know, how the endgame is just completely antithetical to what the campaign, you know, kind of draws you in with the combat and the, you know, actual, you know, open the mindedness, the mindfulness that you need to actually get through the combat in the campaign. You know, compared to the end game where it just feels like PoE 1, man. I'm going to be real. Like, it feels like PoE 1.
I think that's a great transition into away from nerfs and into just pure changes. So yeah. I would love, and many people would probably hate, they came on and they were like, DM Ghazi, we messed up with the pace of end game in PoE 2. We didn't anticipate people would be zooming this fast. There's going to be some serious changes to monsters, to certain player skills, balance choices here, to mechanics. Like, we've seen the footage. We were incorrect. What do you think? There's a chance that happens. And what are your further thoughts on the end game? I know you might have some spicy takes here, and you have literally a level 93, a level 90, another level 90, like level 89. Like, you have experienced this, man. I have not.
I think that if they are going to make some adjustments and really slow it down like they're intending, that the rewards need to be there. You know what I mean? Like, the pacing can be slowed down for sure, but you need to feel rewarded for the additional time that you're putting into these maps. Like, you know, if they intend for a Waystone to take actually 15 to 20 minutes rather than 5, you know what I mean? Like, it needs to be rewarding for the time that you've input. You know, you need to feel that your time is actually being valued, which they've done a really good job with, you know, overall. It's GGG. Like, I have complete trust that they're going to actually get the game where they want it. I'm really, really curious for this podcast to hear their vision and actually hear their development, you know, their development strategy.
Are there any mechanics in particular that are egregious to you in endgame that are kind of antithetical to the
on death vision? Effects? Yeah, on death effects for sure. And I think that is there a bug right now with when you shatter enemies that you don't actually see the visual of the on death?
I think it's with charged staff in particular.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because my monk, man, like, that was all that I died to. Literally all that I died to was on death effects completely out of nowhere with no counterplay. And it just feels bad.
Definitely. I've died quite a few to on death effects when I was playing my monk, and, you know, I think when I got into T15s and upgraded bosses to extra tiers, I think I was on tier 2 or tier 3 bosses, they started to pose much more of a challenge. Yeah. Honestly, the challenge that I think should be baseline and endgame. But on death effects were my primary method of getting killed. Or, like you said, just the, you know, occasionally does fire damage circles or lightning damage circles, right? That's like it's crazy. I try to mouse my cursor over the rares to see what, like, effects they have before I kill them, right? Because there's a lot of stuff going on screen. I got to know, okay, do I need to dodge back? And honestly, I should probably just reactively just dodge back anyway, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, before I even pick up loot on any rare, I'm always dodging, waiting 5 seconds, and then picking it up, man. like, I've been scoring too many times.
Yeah, they caught the one that was particularly ridiculous, the crystals, volatile crystals, and they just killed that from the game. So
they can just leave it out. They don't need to revisit that or rebalance it. They can just leave it out, man.
What if it's one giant crystal that appears and then shatters in a million directions? You know, very clear telegraph, not little shards scattered along the ground that pop.
Maybe this is a hot take, but I don't want any on-death effects, dude. Like, I think that the monsters that you're fighting should be the interesting combat. You shouldn't be fighting or having to worry about their corpse on the ground.
I do agree with you, and I don't know if it was said in a podcast or if people are just, you know, paraphrasing what they said, but Grinding Gear Games explicitly said they wanted to design PeeWee 2 so that the monsters were very scary when they were alive and not when they were dead, unlike they are a lot of the time in PeeWee 1. And I think they accomplished that in the campaign. I legitimately felt like,
for sure,
okay, I'm in this area now. I know, like, the vulture demons in Act 2. I think it's the city of Cat.
Leaping at you.
Yeah. Leaping at you, dude. Change my play style on that. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, all these different projectile types that would also fly at me that deal different types of damage and have different speeds and stuff. I'd be paying attention to that. You know, even the drowned hags with the insta-killing orbs.
Yeah.
I still think that's better than on-death effects. I know
people
I remember dying to that
for the first time and being like, dude, what the hell just happened? Because I didn't play any of the Diablos. I guess the drowning orbs were a thing in Diablo or...
And PoE 1.
Okay.
Eater of Worlds. Yeah. They're in the Eater of Worlds fight as well.
Yeah, they just look different for sure, yeah.
Yeah, they look different. Yeah, different effects. And obviously, in PoE 1, it's an endgame boss and not an Act 3 area. So, like, I'm fine with that sort of stuff. And even, I'm fine with some monsters having implicit on-death effects, like the bruisers that explode after, like, 5 seconds and their body goes blah, 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 and then it explodes out. I think that's fine. But
that's
having
fine.
It on a rare... And having it spawn so frequently, that's rough.
Yeah, having it be like a rare modifier or something that any rare can get, regardless of their visual appearance or regardless of, you know, your combat against them previously. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I don't know. That's why I said I'm curious to hear their vision on everything and what development direction they want to go in with all of this, for sure.
Dude, I've already told my wife I need to be free. 3:30 Pacific time.
Oh my gosh,
or no,
I
our
know.
Time on so Eastern time
on
Sunday because
too.
I gotta listen to this live. I'm gonna be eating probably not popcorn, maybe some nuts, you know, but listening to this like, oh my gosh, this is gonna be big.
Yeah.
So, I think
it's gonna be really good. And I think that it is indicative of a bigger patch than we were assuming too.
Right. Especially when they're bringing Mark on board. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark and it's Jonathan. So we're gonna get overarching gameplay, plus we're probably going to get a lot of combat and end game a vision too, because Mark, remember, he's the boss guy.
He's the end game guy.
So let's bring him on. Mark's going to come on and be like, every map will now have a boss and everyone will cheer in Twitch chat.
Everyone will cheer. Hell yeah, dude. I'm all for that. The other thing in end game I forgot to mention, towers, dude. Towers. That's the second, like, that's top of mind outside of on-death effects for, you know, what the hell are they going to do with towers?
Those are the top two for you? Towers and on-death?
I would say, yeah. Yeah, that's the most interruption that I've ever had in endgame is towers and just being, you know, having no counterplay to your deaths, which is the definition of on-death effects, I would say.
Right. Because the towers, you know, they want you to juice and set a ton of stuff up and it requires so much effort to do so and you might go through that and then it's the biggest sting if you go into one of these maps and you just instantly die and lose it all. It's rough. So I think we have one, towers, and then two, the effects of the current one portal system of the end game. When it comes to towers, what's your viewpoint? You know, I know a lot of people think, oh, you know, just remove them entirely, just turn them into basically sextants from PoE 1, which for PoE 2 only players, imagine for a tower, you didn't have to run the tower. You just put the tablet into the tower slot and it automatically applied. That's basically what we have in PoE 1 right now with something called sextants. And then there's Camp 2, which is make towers an exciting moment of gameplay. What do you think?
I think that they're a little bit too frequent right now to, you know, make them, like, I've heard maybe add a boss to every tower. I've heard that take. Which I'm all for, but I mean, you do like probably 15 to 20 towers just in a mapping session. You know what I mean? Like when you're spending a couple hours mapping. So
you blaster. Oh my God. What'd you just say?
Is that
I haven't done
normal?
15 to 20 towers my entire endgame session yet.
Oh,
come
my.
On.
No, honestly, I've heard the other take that I've heard is that imagine if you had to do this every time you applied a sextant in right. PoE 1. And right. that's just insane. That's just insane. You know, right. it's a time waste. There's little to no value out of these towers other than the, you know, additional affixes that you're getting on your waystones. So there needs to be something, you yeah. know, rewarding you for the effort and time that you're putting into these and the interruption in your mapping, because they're completely
yeah,
static almost. Like the layout's pretty, you know, boring.
Yeah, I think that's why people are very black and white on this issue. It's either basically remove them from the game, turn them into yeah. just a button I press, or as you just said, make them rewarding for the time investment, make them fun in some way.
Right.
Whether it's varying up that map layout, adding some different monster types there, maybe putting league mechanics in, maybe putting in a certain type of endgame system that only occurs in towers. So you're even more excited when you get to run a tower and have a chance at fighting like, I don't know, a lieutenant of the Arbiter of Ash, which, by the way, we haven't touched on the Arbiter at all. I saw a tweet from you saying that you downed all three citadels. Did you end up trying the Arbiter?
I haven't yet, dude. My Blood Mage is not in the spot for it, dude. I am out of mana flasks on any prolonged boss fight because the resources that Blood Mage uses is just absurd. Like, I hope that Life Remnants gets touched in some way in this patch, and that's just a completely selfish, you know, want. Because
yeah.
I do enjoy Blood Mage, but it's just absurd right now.
Okay. Well, the Arbiter, I mean, the Arbiter, so Arbiter first. Man, you're that scared. So you've been sitting on these for a few days now.
It's a couple divines, man.
I know. That's the thing. So it's like,
yeah,
I feel
like I
don't
want to waste it.
Yeah. Problem.
And it's hours of time investment.
Yeah. Problem in PoE 1 that they solved with this.
Yeah.
Now people are fighting like, oh, do I try this really cool boss, which I get one attempt at, or do I literally make enough currency to fund my next build after everything is nerfed into the ground? Like
right.
it's such a, it's I know. Such a tough decision. And I don't like, I say that, oh yeah, I totally try Arbiter. I totally go into it. And I say it so nonchalantly, but in my mind, that's honestly not what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh my God, this is so actually tough. Like
it's scary.
200 hours to get here. You know, I could sell the fragments and get,
yeah.
basically my entire net worth doubles or something. It's just crazy, you know, for
you're
casual.
At a crossroads. Like how do you value that 100 plus hours that you just spent acquiring
yeah.
those three fragments, you know?
Right.
Do you want to, like you said, do you want to make another character almost entirely with that amount of funds?
You can.
Or, you know, do you want to give it a shot? A single shot. Like
single shots, man. All right. I feel like we could talk a little bit about that. How, so you've played a lot of endgame. 16 towers in a mapping session. Get out of here, dude. So how have you
They're
felt
so frequent.
About, how have you felt about the one and done? Has that, are you, has that infuriated you? Have you been fine with it? Do you think it's like, eh, it's okay?
I haven't rage quit yet.
Proud.
So that's a positive, I guess. But you know, I'm probably more of a patient gamer than most too. So, and I have a lot more time to spend too, obviously. So yeah, it's, do you think that they'll budge at all on the one system, on the one portal system? I don't know. Like I said, it needs to be amply rewarded. Like you need to be rewarded for the time and potential punishment that you're basically enduring with this one portal system.
If they were to change it, they'd need to completely redo how rewards mm-hmm. are divvied out in the end game, which is a lot of work. I don't think it'll happen with this patch, but I hope it'll be touched on a little bit either way. So I hope if they plan on keeping it this way, they'll say, all right, yeah, we're pleased with the one portal system. Obviously there are some things like on death effects and different defensive mechanisms to use
yeah.
that we need to touch, but we're staying with the one portal. And if they are thinking about shifting it, I hope they do the same. They're like, okay, we can't shift it now because it requires fundamental gameplay changes. You know,
right.
with how rewards are divvied out, how league mechanics spawn in maps. So we're going to work toward changing this to giving you multiple chances. I just hope they address it either way. On bosses, though, I'm pretty steadfast that you need multiple attempts on bosses, and they just go back to 100% health if you die or portal out. I'm almost...
That is the punishment, right? Like, that is, you should... You're right now, you're punished with what? EXP. You're punished by the time loss. You're punished by the waystone that you've just lost, you know, and all of the mods that you potentially buffed it up with towers. It's endless. Like, there's too many punishments for a single death, which, you know, you should be able to learn from and improve from.
Yeah, especially on those bosses.
Especially like the pinnacles, on bosses, yeah.
Especially on Arbiter. I feel like Citadels are the same way. Man, worst feeling. It has basically caused me to play hardcore solo self-found, which I know is kind of antithetical.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I've been watching
it. But it's like, you know, at least I like know, and in the campaign, I feel like I'm a little bit more in control of my destiny, and I know, okay, you know, I got to dodge these attacks. I got to go through this particular tile set in this way. Oh, here are the monsters that are upcoming here. And there isn't as much of the BS on death effects like in the campaign. So I'm pretty much fine with it. And I feel like all the errors in that part of the game will be on me. But then in something like the Arbiter of Ashflight, which I've now seen a few times, I would never clear that on my first go, my second go, my third go, my fourth go. I wouldn't, even if I study the fight.
Yeah.
And that kind of sucks because every time that I attempt it, it's going to be, okay, you spent 300 hours to get here, or you bought this with 10 divine orbs or something. And I dislike that. I've discovered in my last pod with Snoo that I'm a completionist, which is funny. But I like to like set a goal.
I didn't even do the challenges in POE1. Like you did,
it's crazy,
36
bro.
Out of 40 or
it's crazy. Yeah, I love that.
Grinded end game, man. For me, I was a WoW player, like literally that almost my entire life since, you know, 2004. Literally, I've been playing WoW. So it really kind of hid me away from all of the other games. And then I found Path of Exile and I was like, okay, in between WoW patches, like this is my game, dude. So every single league since Breach, I would come back and play, you know, I'd play for 2-3, maybe a month and then go back to WoW. So I never really went super hardcore into Path of Exile, but now I'm a dad, I've got a wife, I've got a full-time job. So yeah, ARPGs are my new MMO. That's where I want to spend my time. That's where I feel most rewarded. And honestly, MMOs have sort of shifted towards that seasonal model anyway. So like literally playing WoW now and Dragonflight and others, like other recent expansions, like it just felt like you're playing an ARPG. Your gear is completely reset after every, you know, raid patch, basically. Yeah. Like you just have to grind it all back again. So I'm just like, I'm just gonna play RPGs. Like GGG respects my time a lot more, and I'm all here for it.
Yeah, I feel like in MMOs, which I was never a WoW person. I never even tried it. I was a Guild Wars 2, a Dungeons and Dragons Online, a Neverwinter Nights individual. With those, I feel like the problem is for me nowadays, like you said, also have two kids, also have a wife, family, work, full-time work, everything. It's they almost, they don't force you. Force is a strong word. I'm going to use it anyway. They force you to log in daily, and they force you to be there at 9 p.m. Eastern time to fight this world boss or catch this raid group. And, you know, and I can't do that.
It's,
you know,
almost
like
mobile game-esque at this point, where they're trying to get you to log in for your, you know, X reward every day. Yeah, they have literally what they're called dailies or world quests or whatever in WoW,
dailies, weeklies, monthlies, and reset times. And, you know, I remember when I was in college, I used to, like, raid reset was 3 a.m. my time for Guild Wars 2. So I'd get up at 4 and try to catch, the pro groups you know, would go through the raid, all the raid wings in maybe like 3 hours or something so that I could finish my entire raid week that morning and not have to worry about it, which is like, Jesus, it puts
it's
you into
chore.
That mindset. Like, why are you worrying about a game? Oh my God.
I know.
So, interesting. And I don't feel that
I'm
way.
I'm absolutely loving Path of Exile 2. Like I think about it when I'm not playing it. Like what could I do with my build to improve it? Or, you know, what if I use this unique on, you know, a Pathfinder, you know? So it's literally taking me back to my old WoW days where I just got to experiment and be in a sandbox and have fun.
And you get to decide, you know, when you want to play, which is great.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Great question here. Has the pause feature saved you at any point?
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. Yeah. My daughter comes down or my wife calls for me, man. Escape. What's up? You know, like it's immediate. It's immediate. Nice. It used to be a meme that you couldn't pause online games, and now you can.
You can't. It works like a charm. I haven't encountered any, you know, weird bugs with it or any finickiness. It just worked, and I love it. It has also
saved
me.
It's so smooth.
Yeah, with my daughter, it saved me. It's really great. So
yeah,
that's good. That's good. You just mentioned something really interesting that I want to pick on. This isn't antagonistic. Maybe it's a little antagonistic. You've been thinking about crafting builds and the like outside of Path of Exile 2, you know, when you're not playing. Now, I've talked to a few people now that are also build creators, and they like PoE 2. Some of them love PoE 2, but they're like, you know, I feel like I'm in the smallest sandbox ever, and there's all these people stuffed inside it, and we're all trying to use the same shovel at once, right? Or the same, let's just say, you know, how many archetypes are there? Maybe like five shovels. You know, there's 20 people, but five shovels. And they're just like, at full release, it'll be a lot better. But right now, I don't think there's a lot of room for customization. How do you feel about that whole debate?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of diversity right now. They're literally missing half of the classes and ascendancies. They're missing half of the weapon sets. And, you know, probably more than half of the uniques, I would say. There's really only leveling uniques and a few standouts, you know, right now. So, yeah, I would definitely say that the diversity is not where it should be or not where it's going to be. And I felt that a ton trying to create off-meta builds. Like, I literally had to go to Flame Blast Blood Mage to feel like I was playing something no one else was playing, dude.
Did it work, though? I mean, I saw you put a build out.
Yeah. I mean, it's mapping in tier 15s completely smoothly, like clearing screen wide. So it's super fun. But like I said, the issue is the mana and just health resources that you're spending on Blood Mage right now. Like, I think my cost for my single target Flame Blast right now is like 800 mana and 800 life per second while you're channeling it, dude.
That's insane, man.
It's nuts. What? Because I'm scaling levels. I saw a post on Reddit that mana scaling is like out of whack right now. Like, it's scaling exponentially rather than linearly like it did in PoE 1.
Oh.
So I don't know if it's an issue or, you know, if that's intended.
Just missing a little bracket here, a parenthesis there.
Yeah, and, something. It's outrageous, the mana costs. And Melee can't even use plus levels, or they're just completely screwed because they don't have access to the mana regen and other things that spellcasters do.
Oh yeah, I feel that with my Tempest Flurry Invoker, because I have a bunch of levels on my staff and everything, and you know, I don't have very good gear, and I'm just, my mana's just fading away. I have to spam my mana pot constantly.
Yeah,
so I know that there are ways to solve it, you know, but I think they require smarter people than I, or lots of currency. I know Snoo was telling me like, oh bro, you can totally solve this. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here just pressing two over and over and over.
Yeah, he's making Flicker Strike work pretty well, isn't he?
He is. Yep. Yeah. Flicker Strike with a Charge Staff, Tempest Flurry.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's really fun. I know we already talked about the monk, but it's good. My people hate this. My dad is playing Ice Strike, and I played it for a few minutes. Man, Ice Strike is good, dude. I might have to swap from Tempest Flurry if I hop back on my monk.
What did you like about it? How it teleports you to enemies, basically? Like,
yes, I didn't really know that because I'm not watching lots of gameplay. And I thought, I guess, when I saw some of the gameplay that, oh, they're just using, like, Shattering Palm, right?
No. Kind of. Like, you use that as well, but no, yeah. Ice Strike does it on its own.
We are just going pop, 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 jumping from pack to pack, monster to monster. And just the weight of that felt like the responsiveness and then the weight of smacking the enemies. Oh, it felt good.
And then the Herald of Ice shatters. It just all comes together, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So either I'll swap my Tempest Flurry, or maybe, you know, when the next league comes out, after I max my Druid to level 100, because it's going to be the greatest class in the history of Path of Exile 2, then I will do an Ice Strike Monk or something.
Have you seen how long 100 takes to get?
Yeah, I'm not going to get 100. That's
okay.
That's my full-time content creator.
I was like, that's a bold claim, dude.
Yeah. I think I think it was a Karn tweet. He's like, just hit 99. You know, 100 will only take a few days, right? And I'm pretty sure that, you know, there was a heavy sarcasm in that comment.
Yeah. Well, a few days for him, he plays like 40-hour days, I think. So
yeah. So that's not happening for me.
No way, man. It's so long.
Please do not make that a challenge in leagues. Oh my god. Oh, don't do it.
Level 100. They've got to have alternatives. Didn't they have alternatives before for like the end game challenge or whatever?
They do, but usually 100 is pretty dang easy compared to the other ones that you're going for. Some of them you just get passively if you play, and then there's usually like a labyrinth one that I'm like, nope, I can't do these labyrinth ones, and a few others that are pretty easy. The 100 is one I usually go with. I can even farm it myself sometimes. So nice.
Nice. I was always the, I'm going to make a new character. I've got currency. So I never ever like made it to, you know, 98, 99 plus.
Really? Oh, it's a good feeling when you ding 100, especially when you don't do it cheaply, which is like five ways or back when I first started, it was Chayula runs. That was my first like 100, I think, was via Chayula runs and 3.10 or something.
Like and solo since, or was that like Rotas?
Oh, it was Rotas. Yeah, it was Rotas. Yeah. It almost blew up my computer back then.
Oh my god, I mean, all literally, the loot and everything.
I think my computer like started to smoke and then it was like propelling itself off the ground because the fans were working so hard. It was just a bad situation all around.
Yeah.
But I got my 100, so.
Worth it. Worth
Definitely worth it. Now, I wanted to ask too a little bit more about Peewee 2 before we get into some interesting takes about another favorite game of yours. So we talked, I briefly mentioned that I'm very excited for the Druid. And we mentioned there's going to be a ton more archetypes in the game, you know, 24 more Ascendancy classes, 6 more whole classes, lots of new weapons, all that, more acts. Among all that stuff, is there any one thing that you're hyper excited for or just something that is going to make you log in even harder on that league launch day when it finally comes out during the early access, not the full release?
I'm really excited for the Shadow Rogue, you know, that sort of archetype, dude. That's what I played in WoW. And if they can get it anywhere near how quarterstaff feels for melee, like with the ability to teleport to enemies and things like that, oh my god. Yeah, I'm gonna be all over that.
Ooh, yeah, I think they'll be able to do it. And a really curious thing, I know you're a WoW player, so this is probably heresy for you.
Not anymore.
Well, okay, so here we go. So this is going to be fine. Guild Wars 2, another MMO, they have a concept kind of similar to Ascendancies called Elite Specializations.
Oh, it's essentially,
I've
played Guild Wars 2, yeah.
Oh, you have? Okay, so you already know.
I forgot to mention, you know, in my attempts to basically get away from WoW over the course of the entirety of its existence, I've played every WoW killer out there, man.
Oh, you have.
So I'm an MMO guy. I've played literally everything. I started with EverQuest, went to SWG, Star Wars Galaxies, and then went in straight into WoW, and that hooked me for quite a while. But I've tried literally everything in between. Guild Wars 2, SW Tour, the list goes on.
Did you try Wildstar during its brief stint?
Yep. Dude, I wish it stayed around. That was so good.
I've heard from pretty much everyone who got their hands on it. So it just must have really appealed to a certain populace, but it wasn't enough to, you know, the GGG 10,000, you know, active players. It just must not have.
And I think finances were an issue for them and things like that. It just went under. Yeah, that sucked. That was the one that would have kept me, I think.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't get to try. I was immersed into Guild Wars 2 at the time, but
yeah.
I regret not being able to give it a go because I ended up really like, because it was also developed by NCSoft, right? Or NCSoft West developers, I think.
They were affiliated at least, yeah.
Yeah, because I know some of the people who designed the raids in Wildstar moved to Guild Wars 2 and they made the raids there, actually. I think like Crystal Reed is her name. She did a really good job on the first raids in Guild Wars 2, and I think she popped on over from
Wildstar. The raids were so good.
Right. And now I think she worked on Destiny for a little bit. So unfortunate situation there.
So she's a good encounter designer then.
She's very good. Oh, the first Guild Wars 2 raids, the first four, I think, are peak raid design in an MMO. But I'm not that experienced. I only played DDO, Dungeons and Dragons Online, and Guild Wars 2, but like those encounters, very well made. Total tangent. Oh my god, elite spec. So essentially ascendancies in an MMO, in Guild Wars 2. And I feel like grinding gear games. I've asked a few of the devs if they like play Guild Wars 2, because I swear some of the concepts and almost the exact mechanics are lifted from Guild Wars 2 things that have been around for like 5 years. And I'm not talking like, oh, you know, they both have chronomancers now. You know, of course there's going to be overlap on the... No, literally like the designs and almost the trait names are moving to PUE 2 in a Path of Exile 2 format. And it's cool. And I wonder if with the shadow, back to what I was, the point I was trying to originally make.
sorry to sidetrack you.
Dude, these are podcasts. We can ramble all we want. It's fine. Our show. We're good. They have something called shadow stepping in Guild Wars 2, where it's like various ways to teleport and manipulate different targets and trap locations and areas. And I feel like that could work so well in PUE 2.
That would be amazing. I played, so I never really got into the raids of Guild Wars 2. I was more of a world versus world guy. So I was always in the PvP guilds and things like that when I played. And yeah, so the ability to, was it, what was the class called in that game?
Thief.
Was it rogue? Thief. Okay, yeah. That was my favorite class by far. Yep. By far. Just one-shotting people that were strays from world versus world. Oh my god.
Oh, it's still a feel-good moment. And I was my thief. That was my first character too. My wife and I started a thief. She started an elementalist. We were both the Sura, the little race.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And so like she didn't like PvP as much as I did. She liked the exploration aspects a lot more and still does. But I would go into SPVP, like the structured PvP and world versus world. And dude, if you could get like one vulnerability hit off someone and then TP like three screens away, and they'd like use their dodge because they think another hit is coming. And they do this every time, even though they knew what you were going to do. They dodge and then you TP back to your place, three screens back away, and you just one shot them. And it felt so good every time. I can't believe
that's almost exactly what I'm talking about with Rogue and and Shadow, dude. If they can pull that off in this game, it will feel so good in mapping and just in general for combat.
Do you think they could do that? Would it be like some sort of marking system? Like, because in an ARPG, being able to just execute things from high health obviously is busted. I wonder what they could do there, like some sort of marking system or a combo.
Well, I mean, they have
system.
Shattering Palm and you know the Palm skills from Monk. I mean, it would feel similar to that, just to be able to teleport and strike immediately with that skill. Just the movement and the ability to traverse, you know, like that would be amazing.
Yeah, and maybe with Hammer of the Gods, very powerful on the warrior. Yeah. Maybe a cooldown skill where you can pseudo execute certain monsters from high health. If certain conditions are met, I think that'd be pretty freaking
like
cool on the dagger.
Amplified calling strike or something.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome on the dagger in some way. Yeah, big sneak attacks, you know, just pull some Dungeons and Dragons, you guys. It works out really well, I swear. It's good.
I'm really excited to see where they go with that archetype for sure.
Definitely. And we didn't even talk about traps and all that, which are now weapons. That's an entire weapon class in PUE 2.
That's
going to
be weird,
right? Yeah. So we haven't seen those since ExileCon 2023. It's going to open up.
Didn't somebody drop one on accident in Path of Exile 2 right now? Like they dropped the weapon of a trap or something, or the item?
Yeah, from the Trial Master.
It's just not functional?
Yeah.
From the Trial Master?
Yes. There's a great sword, I believe, and a trap, an incense unique that I've seen people say, yes, this dropped from the Trial Master. I don't know if they're Trial Master specific. I'd almost reckon that they were. And that's why they're dropping like there more commonly and like specifically. Like maybe they don't have them marked as world drops, but they just put all the Trial Master's unique drops in.
They forgot to remove it from the loot table.
Exactly. I think that's what's going on. So maybe he has the Great Sword, which I don't know if he wields a Great Sword in PUE 2. I haven't fought him in PUE 2.
Yeah.
And then the trap. And maybe there's a trap mechanic as well. It is the trial of chaos. I bet there's some traps in that fight. So
that would be cool if you did have some boss specific uniques for those. Yeah,
dude, there are some. Act one final boss. If we do not get Agnar as a unique item, that's the great sword, you guys. If we don't get that, we march to Grinding Gear Games headquarters. Okay, here from the U.S., we just go all the way to New Zealand, cross the seas. We knock on their doors. We ask them to add Agnar. That is such a cool weapon. Oh my God.
I did notice on PoE2 DB today that there's some swords and spears showing now in the uniques. So do you think that we're going to be getting something like that with the patch? Any new content, you think, or just adjustments?
I didn't even bring it up because I am a naysayer. Do you think we will?
I don't know, man. I've seen what GGG can cook up in a week, so.
Oh, hey, yeah, that is exactly what I tweeted. I'm like, hey, there could be some wild stuff in this patch. I feel like, I don't think they'll add a whole new weapon or a class or anything. I've seen a lot of people saying that. Guys, I am the hype lord, okay? No, I don't think it's happening. Don't hype yourselves up, okay?
I mean, what if it was like super ready and just barely missed the mark for EA? You know what I mean? Like they're just gonna squeeze it in for testing because that's what EA is all about.
Here's my argument. So my argument against it, I'll do an argument against and a little argument for. So argument against, they've revealed the name of the patch. It's 0.1.1. Okay. I think if they were going to add something as large as a brand new weapon or class, we're going to 0.2, baby. 0.2. Okay. We're not doing the, you know, sub patch thing. They've never done that in the history of, you know, Path of Exile 1's open beta, closed beta, all that.
Yeah.
They always do a big transition shift. And Jonathan also said to me in that interview, he was like, yeah, if we release something big, we're doing a version shift, right?
Yeah.
0.1 to 0.2.
However, I mean, with the swords would have to come the skills and everything else too. That is true.
Exactly. Because if you just, you're not just adding a weapon class, you're adding a skill archetype to the game. Now, maybe, you know, there's some quarterstaff skills that are hiding right now. Maybe we'll get a few quarterstaff skills. Maybe there's like a fire version of an auto attack or a wind version of an auto attack.
You can see it missing a few in the gem cutting.
Yeah. So maybe we'll get something like that. I think that is possible. Yeah. The brand new archetypes. Now, here's the argument for. They are also restreaming this interview on the Path of Exile Twitch account, which has hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers. They don't typically do this.
No.
This
could be big, man.
They are drawing lots and lots of eyes to this particular interview. And I'm wondering, they don't have time to put together like a whole league announcement reveal and do the whole stream prep and blah, blah, blah. So they're just doing, you know, the post and maybe a video on their side and then going straight into the interview with, let's face it, the number 16 and number 15 Twitch streamers in the world.
Exactly. Yeah,
I mean, they're huge audience, right?
Yep.
They have
a
big reach. They got a lot of subs. There's going to be a lot of people watching there. So it could be big.
It could be.
Yeah.
I think that they really want to, you know, not recapture, but, you know, just maintain this hype train that they have going. Like the number stability with the Steam charts has just been insane. That is mind blowing to me.
Thank you for saying that. I've seen some people saying like, yeah, the game is losing tons of players. Nobody's going to be playing by the end of January because the game is like broken. God, I still feel like there is a segment. And it's primarily PoE1 like creators or players that I've seen say this that are saying, oh, the game is so broken. It's so bad. There's so many issues with it. And I cannot concede that point. I feel like that is, one, not true, and two, disingenuous, because Grinding Gear Games has said there are going to be lots of problems, especially with the end game. You know, we're going to do our best to fix it. But people saying that this game is fundamentally broken, especially in the first big chunk of it in the campaign, I cannot say that in good faith. I just can't. I feel like it's very well made, especially in that section. And even the end game, which I have ripped because there are segments of it which I have not enjoyed, I still think it's better than a good chunk of competition. How do you feel about that, man?
Yeah, like, I honestly think that they're sandbagging. You know what I mean?
Jesus Christ. I'm going to kick you off this pod right now, Gav.
What? No, yeah, but no, like it feels like a completed game already. So to call it early access, I can see where Elon was coming from with that, dude. It's almost disingenuous to how good the game is right now. It's insane.
Okay. All right, Gav, here's the big debate. Can you explain context for people who might not know what you just referenced?
Yeah, so Elon Musk tweeted out that they were sandbagging, basically, because they didn't call it a full release. They called it an early access.
And the definition of sandbagging, for people who are unaware, as myself, because I was like, what? Sandbag sounds like really crappy. What is sandbagging? The version that I believe Elon was using was, you know, they are misrepresenting the extent of how good their game is. Like, they're intentionally saying, hey, you know, it's not in that good a state right now, right? So they're kind of lying to their audience so that they can get, you know, better good faith or whatever, right? I think that's generally the vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Bro, I totally disagree. I totally disagree with you and Elon. And here's
why. No. Wait. I'm not saying I agree 100% with Elon, dude. No, I'm saying I see where he was coming from with that. Because this is by far the most complete early access game that I've ever played. And the amount of early access games that I've played is absolutely absurd. So coming from me, that is insane. They've done so well.
Here's the thing. This isn't a GGG problem. This is a GGG W. And I feel like the most, love him, hate him, one of the most influential people in the world saying that and trying to shift opinion toward that mindset is detrimental, not only to Path of Exile 2, but to the entire freaking games industry, because what he's saying there is like, yeah, you know, in this state, just release in full and let's encourage people who release into early access with a price point release half-baked trash where you can only play for 2 hours and there's hundreds of thousands of bugs and all that. Like, I just can't stand behind that, because that is what it encourages. I think what he sees, and I said this on stream earlier, I think he sees Grinding Gear Games could have sold this for $80 for everyone, right? They don't, and they could do the tiered versions too, but start at $80. They'd make bank. They'd still probably have similar player numbers. And then he's like, free to play, also sandbagging. Sell the Templar, sell the Druid, sell the Huntress in a pack with the rest of the axe, $30. I'm just saying, I think this is what he sees as a businessman.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's seeing that Grinding Gear Games could just go to the moon with this game. And instead, they are doing what they promised their players for the past 5 years and being a good company. No matter if you hate Grinding Gear Games, you think the game is trash, you cannot say that they are not caring of their player base and they are trying their absolute best to be faithful to all their promises. You know, of course, guilds didn't transfer the MTX and stuff. That sucks. There's some things missing. Consoles don't have loot fields. They are trying their best and they're staying true to their values. And they're not just trying to cash in massively like a lot of other people probably would.
Not only that, but they fundamentally understand their game, man. Like, they know the state that it's in and they know the work that still needs to be done. They have a vision. They're not just pulling this out of their asses. Like, they have a vision for this game and they're going to execute on it. And that's what this 6 months to a year plus period is going to be. And we're all here for it. So the fact that we, you know, we're basically beta testing right now, you know, let's put it straight, you know, but it's all in good faith. And we know that GGG is going to deliver, you know, based on their previous track record. So this is the worst state that the game will ever be in. You know what I mean? That's the best quote that I've ever heard as far as what's going on right now. Like, this is the worst state that the game's going to be in. Like, it's only up from here. Foundationally, if you look at the game and you can see their vision, you can see through GGG's eyes, like, the game's going to be so good, man.
Oh, 100%. Totally agree. But the state's going to get worse when they nerf Warrior with the next patch, right?
Because true. Did you see the Dreamcore Shockwave bug video?
I did. I
honestly think that's going to get touched, man. That's sad. That is sad.
Yeah, probably. It's going to be rough when it happens.
It's all Dreamcore's fault.
He totally brought attention to it for the first time. They didn't catch it.
The people that are one-shotting bosses on Titans are going to be pretty mad, man.
Yeah, I think someone in the community was talking about doing that, like, week one. And I know Darth Microtransaction, like, his first build was one-shotting on Titan and everything, which is crazy. It's crazy stuff. Okay, we went off a little bit on the rails there. I did want a little segment on another game that was in early access for a really long time that you kind of started covering on your channel. It was where your channel really started, Gav, and that's Last Epoch. Now, we don't necessarily need to dive into, you know, the state of Last Epoch or the development cycle and everything. Yeah. I'm more interested in, as someone who's played a lot of the game, you know, you covered the history of it, builds in it, the lore of it, all that. I'm curious about two questions. We can start with whichever one you'd like to first. One, what do you think is one thing that PoE 2 could just steal from Last Epoch and blatantly improve the game? And then the other way around, what's one thing you think Last Epoch could just steal from PoE 2 and blatantly improve that game?
Okay, so I'll start off with what GGG could steal.
Okay.
So basically trade. They could take the auction house bazaar system that Last Epoch implemented with their separate trade and 100% implement that into their game and do it better. And okay, the amount of complaints that I've seen and heard about the trade system, it's fine for me. I've played Path of Exile since Breach League. I understand, you know, how to put in the tilde and, you know, make sure that you're searching for whatever you need to and putting in those right min and max qualities and things like that. Like, it's just so much. It's so much for a new player. It is right. Such a huge ask to ask a new player to exit the game, not exit, but alt tab out of the game, go into their browser and search for an item that they want.
Yep.
That's so archaic and just, you know, insane to me in this day and age.
Yep. I do agree on that point as well.
I don't know if it's a technical limitation on GGG's side or why they have to stick with it.
They've kind of said that, but I think it's more so their vision of them wanting trade to be very frictional mm-hmm. and requiring you to do all that, right?
Yeah.
But I do think they have addressed, you know, saying, all right, the industry or the populace is changing. We need to change with the times. So I do think it's only a matter of time before something like the trade harbor, the bazaar? Is it the bazaar?
Yeah, yeah.
The bazaar is implemented somehow into Path of Exile 2. I mean, the currency exchange market, dude. I mean, obviously it's in PoE 2, but Settlers of Kalgur?
Yeah.
Life-changing. Oh my God.
It's so good. It's so good. So that's, you know, that's already taking the bulk of, you know, the strain out of it, the clunk out of it, you know, having yep. to, you know, so all of the currency exchange is great. And just taking from that and implementing items in some way, you know, they can find a way to keep it secure and keep it safe for people that aren't, you know, going to get outbid on, you know, if they put their item up for 10x, instead of getting 50 whispers and knowing that, oh, I mispriced this. You know, that item's just going to get sniped. If they put it up on the bazaar for 10x and it's worth a divine, the item's going to get sniped immediately, potentially by a bot.
Yeah. And the friction, from my perspective, that they had in PoE1 for a lot of time, I wonder if it was partly to try to combat the bot problem too, but it never, at least when I played, I interacted with a lot of bots and it wasn't just currency. You know,
people love the bots, dude. They respond and immediately.
Yeah, they did back then. Yeah, exactly. So I think it would be a win overall from my perspective. And I think from a lot of other people's as well. I do agree that when I played Last Epoch, I did Circle of Fortune, so I didn't do Bazaar. It seemed like people had a decent chunk of problems with the Last Epoch Bazaar system. And when it's in game like that, and gold is like so implicit with item trading, if there's any bugs like we've seen in PoE 2 with duping or mm-hmm. You know, gold exploits, it's bad. It's really bad. So before they
it's detrimental to the economy. Yeah
it is. So before they implement something like that, they really got to make sure that they figure out all these cases in which they're finding right now in early access, because it really can just destroy things. You know, Diablo Force had the same thing where they've had to close down the economy entirely for a few days. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, I know that they have their hands full and that they're going to be extremely slammed with early access. So I don't even know if this is on their radar for implementation in EA, but this would be the perfect testing ground, a completely voided league, you know, for an economy to go awry, you know?
Yeah. Totally agree. And now EHG, do you think there's anything that they could lift from
100%?
Oh, okay. What do you think?
Yeah. So with LE, one of my big issues, you know, as a build, you know, a tinkerer, I guess, was the lack of build diversity and the fact that the class that you choose are the skills that you have. That's it. You can't, you know, you can't choose any other skills from any other class. There are some uniques that allow you to interact with, you know, things like you can call down meteors if you wear the I don't even remember the name of the belt, the stars belt. So you can call down meteors and get that Sork, you know, sort of play style if you use that belt. But you're locked into these skills, and that's a balance issue for me and for EHG, I think, going forward. If you pick this class and you have X skills and they're not as overpowered as, you know, some other class, then, you know, you just accidentally, you know, found yourself in this spot, and there's no way around it. You can't be creative or build that particular class any other way. Right. You just have X skills and X, you know, uniques that interact with those skills to use. So I think that they could really, really open up build diversity by allowing other classes, not necessarily the skill gem system. That would be, I mean, maybe they could just steal the skill gem system or something. I don't know how they would implement it. I'm not a developer by any means, but
maybe like, maybe not. Well, freely is an option. And then like a multi-class system where you can try to spec into another class's skills and get lift a few or something, you know?
Yeah. Like, I love that they're keeping all of the classes not homogenous. So they want to make sure that each class has its own identity. And I totally get that. But, you know, looking at it from an ARPG standpoint and just, you know, having played Path of Exile and feeling that just insane diversity, like, it blows your mind thinking that you could just equip a mace on a witch, you know, and just build something that no one's ever built before because they never even thought to pick up a mace as a witch.
Yeah.
So that's just really cool to me and something that I totally think that LE could implement in some way.
I think those are both great ideas. Yeah, I think those are both great ideas. And apparently there are quite a few meta mace witch builds out there, which I didn't know, with blood.
Oh yeah,
blood
the Quinn build, like, man.
At two-handed and one hand. Quinn's build is that?
Did he make a blood mage, I think, as one of his first characters, and made it like an ignite bleed blood mage using Hammer of the Gods or something insane?
That's really cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that PoE2 enables that. So are you looking forward to the Last Epoch season, not cycle, in April? You gonna play it, you think?
It'll all depend on where EA's at for Path of Exile 2. I'm addicted, man. So this has really, really swayed me. This is my game now. This is main game energy for sure.
Main game energy. Holy crap, Gav. That's a big thing to say about an early access title. I have one more thing. The lore of PoE2. Did you blast through or did you pay attention to it?
A little bit of both, because from my point of view, I'm going to be doing the campaign at least 20 times within the next couple months. And then I'm going to be making videos on it once all six acts are out. So I want to kind of preserve it almost for that playthrough, for that campaign playthrough that I record fully and do fully. I don't want to burn myself out on all of it right now, but I did pay attention to all of the gist of it and things like that. But I'm a documentarian, man. I'm not like super into the lore like you and Noodle. Like I just wanted to show everybody, like, hey, this is pretty cool. Like, this was my one playthrough that I actually listened to the lore and went through it all, and, you know, here it is for y'all if you want to watch it. So that's why I made that series.
Awesome. It was beautiful, and Twitch chat and YouTube chat are already telling me what I knew as soon as you said MGE. PoE2 is main game energy already. Hell, that's the title of the YouTube video. Thank you so much, Gav. I really appreciate that. I think that's a damn good title. So
love it.
That's awesome, man. Well, we've been chatting for just over an hour. Anything else you'd like to talk about, or, you know, shout out to the current chat and the people this far into the VOD?
Yeah, I mean, definitely keep an eye on my channel if you guys are interested in some crazy off-meta stuff. I'm looking to, you know, play things that nobody's played, pick up some uniques that nobody's really worked with, and see what I can do.
100%. Everybody go check out Gavrin on YouTube. I believe it's at Gavrin Gaming right now. He put out, you know, the off-meta witch build, which, I mean, it looked busted. I saw the first few minutes of the VOD, and you're just blowing up stuff, which is pretty
dang
cool with that off-meta build.
But it needs some help.
It needs some help. Grind Gear Games, please buff it with this next patch. It was fun speculating with you here today, Gav. Thank you so much. Anybody this far into the video, please make sure you hit the like button. And if you're watching the VOD right now on YouTube, hit the like button too. It helps out the channel. And why don't you subscribe? I hope that before I go to bed tonight, I will hit 50,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Let's go.
Holy crap. Guys, I'm only like 20 subs away. So if you're not subbed and watching this VOD, or you're watching this live on YouTube, how dare you? Come on, you could be that 50,000th. I can't even say 50,000th. Yeah, I can't say it. You can be that 50K sub. You could be that person. Sorry for the long outro. Thank you so much,
man.
Gav.
Thank you so much for having me, man. This was really fun.
Oh, 100%, dude. We'll chat later. Have a wonderful night, my fellow exiles.